Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 818, August the 10th, 1987. In case you didn't hear the broadcast last week, I announced that at the end of September, September 28th, 1987, with broadcast number 825, I'm going to discontinue the tape cassettes that go out by subscription or that are played on other radio stations, and limit my broadcasting to 2 hours a week on Kazoo that will be 2 hours of talk show. The format will be to take 10 or 20 of the most important stories of the week, run them down with you, similar to the way I do with World Watchers, and then take calls pertaining to those or for information that you have to share, pardon me, on these matters. Now, David Emery from the Bay Area, who has programs on KKUP and KFJC, has come up with a very ingenious idea. And for those who subscribe that didn't get the tapes a long time ago, I might suggest this to you. He's going to put on KKUP and KFJC each week for just 1 hour on each station the broadcast that I did starting in October 1980. That was the time just before Ronald Reagan won the election from Jimmy Carter. And it would be very wonderful for you to, if you don't have these tapes, to subscribe to those monthly, the 1980 tapes, and then compare the news and watch the current news and listen to the background that I had 8 years ago. And then it develops into the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, the hostages coming home from Iran. And Reagan was shot in March, the Pope was shot in May, and events were flowing very rapidly and continuously once Ronald Reagan was sworn in with oath of office. I got out the sheet that accompanies the broadcast for October the 5th, 1980, 7 years ago, broadcast number 461, and I wish I had three lifetimes to play back what I had on the air. And I think for those of you that enjoy World Watchers, if you get the back broadcast, it would be just as informational and just as instructive and even very interesting to listen to these broadcasts and subscribe to those, and all the back broadcasts from March 1977 are available for those who want them. That time period 7 years ago, before Reagan won the election against Jimmy Carter, I discussed the Paul Laxalt file, the links of Paul Laxalt to the USA organization, of course, in Las Vegas and elsewhere. And with the Christic Institute filing their suit regarding the Iran-Contra characters, it was Robert Mayhew from the USA organization that worked closely with Laxalt who hired Santos Trafficante and a group of assassins that later went all over the world, Southeast Asia, Chile, Middle East, Iran, and in the United States worked with the Bay of Pigs operations, and then some of them participated in the Kennedy assassination. So I was talking about the Howard Hughes organization, and Mayhew, coming from the Hughes organization, hired Trafficante, and it's very important to get those roots 7 years ago that you're seeing in the news now. I also did, on that broadcast, information about Carlos the Jackal being saved by the CIA, and talked about arms merchants Frank Turple and George Kokula, who were arrested in New York in 1980. And then, of course, they linked up then to Edwin Wilson, partners with Edwin Wilson and Eric von Marburg and Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins. I was talking about these men in 1980, and that might be of interest to you. I should hope it would be. And then I discussed how in Munich, West Germany, there was a mass murder. One man was blamed for the explosion. The others got away. How justice is served when the patsy is wiped out, the killers flee. Then on that same broadcast in 1980, I talked about the Somoza killers, the very controversial Anastasio Somoza, who was kicked out of Nicaragua in 1979, how he was murdered in 1980. Nobody found the people that murdered him, the group. The CIA was blamed for it. A Uyghur Urism was shot by the police, sort of a Lee Harvey Oswald situation. They were not allowed to identify the body. And Somoza and Nicaragua are, of course, in the news ever since the moment that Reagan was inaugurated, and more now than ever. Also, I talked about the man who shot at Vernon Jordan. He survived the shooting, but I was talking about Joseph Franklin from Mobile, Alabama. And then later I met Larry Flint and put together, before years before I met him, this man had also been responsible for shooting Larry Flynt, trying to kill him and paralyzing him. And this person I was describing, this was in October of 1980. Also, I described what was supposed to be a suicide in 1980 in Brazil of Gustav Franz Wagner, the head of a concentration camp in Poland who lived in São Paulo, Brazil, whose photograph was taken at a birthday party with Adolf Hitler in Rio de Janeiro. And since then, he had lived in São Paulo. The party was in Rio de Janeiro, near there. And since that time period, we found that Joseph Mengele lived in that area, and also the newspapers in Nicaragua and the CNN News had a story of Hitler dying in Mendoza, Argentina, just this past February. I'll have to update that for you. Or he died in January. It was on the news in February, and I want to update the Hitler death in Mendoza, Argentina. So those are the things I was talking about 8 years ago, and with a very good imagination. If you listen to that, you can visualize those days, then put yourself right here in 1987, in October 87, and watch the news today and relate it to the very important things I was talking about 7 years ago. The London Times had a story this past week, Peace Prize Proposed for Kidnapped Israeli. Mordecai Vanunu, the nuclear technician waiting trial in Israel for treason for revealing his country's nuclear secrets, has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, I believe that the reason he's so isolated, and I've done broadcasts on that, is because he revealed Israel's neutron bomb to the New York Times, and that's one of the first articles I want to write about, if not the first, when I discontinue the formal series part of this broadcast and spend more time writing. The London Times said the British-based Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation has nominated Vanunu for the prize for his outstanding contribution to world peace when he revealed the secrets of the Israeli bomb factory that ended decades of speculation about the nuclearization of the Middle East conflict. Vanunu was kidnapped in London by the Mossad. He was taken out of London to Rome and then to Israel, and the support for his nomination, which is probably a long shot, comes from 36 members of the parliament. Last week, Graham Greene, Pierre's Paul Reed, and Oberon Waugh signed a letter to the Times asking for Vanunu's immediate release. It's unbelievable that he's living under these conditions and that people have not voiced a serious protest against the outrage. Of course, I have, and I should be doing more every week, but he is isolated in a cell. It's permanently lit. He's under constant video surveillance, and the authorities refuse to let him see his girlfriend or a priest, and his brother Meyer has been in Great Britain speaking, and he's coming to this country, and he's accused the European leaders of ignoring his brother's illegal kidnapping and says they're trying to break him down psychologically. I think there would be more support if these people connected the atomic bomb to the neutron bomb, but it's hard to get a new idea even into a young head, and I've had trouble. I've contacted these people who are concerned about Vanunu, and they're not at all interested in the fact that he told the London Times, and it was printed in the London Times, about the capability of Israel to have the neutron bomb, which I believe was tested for the United States and for themselves in Cameroon last year. The Pope is coming to Monterey. The budget has been published in all the West Coast papers, at least. It's going to cost us $307,692 per hour. The Monterey County will put up those dollars for the Pope. A friend of mine was over this morning and had on a shirt called Monterey Pope, and he's playing a guitar, and he's got a cross with an earring. I'm getting one of the shirts. I collect these shirts. If any of you want them, they're $10. Write to me, and I will send you a sweatshirt. Let me know what size, saying Monterey Pope playing the guitar. The Los Angeles Times had a brief article about Rear Admiral John Poindexter, who's supposed to have the most amazing memory recall in the White House or in the military service, and they added up that he said, I can't recall 184 times before the Iran-Contra hearing in 2 days, which topped Robert Haldeman, Nixon's chief of staff, whose memory only failed him 150 occasions. The Associated Press carried a story this past week that North is being investigated very closely for criminal activities, and Mr. Lawrence Walsh was at the American Bar Association convention in San Francisco, and he said the prominence of a person or the popularity of a person has nothing to do with a criminal case, because any more than an unpopular person should be prosecuted The evidence will stick for itself. And one of the things that the special prosecutor is challenging North about is that he refuses to obey a grand jury subpoena for a sample of his handwriting. Much of the case is under seal, but the court records indicate that North was held in contempt of court May the 8th by Robinson, and they believe that some documents that were located evidently had his handwriting on them. They were not supposed to be his handwriting. Goodness knows what they were, but this American hero, it would be very fitting to see him be charged with forgery, among other things, and he's fighting this in court. There's a story in the San Francisco Examiner, July 28th, AIDS wiping out Indians, the Navajo physician warns. And this is one of the saddest stories and most horrible things that I've read in a long, long time. AIDS is spreading rapidly through the American Indian tribes. It could wipe out the smaller reservations, partly because the culture tolerates bisexual relationships. A doctor in Seattle speaking for the Navajo Nation Department of Health says that AIDS could be passed on to children at birth, killing them at age 2. It could wipe out entire tribes. It can saturate all the childbearing members of a tribe. This reminds me of the King Alfred plan that I obtained from somebody who got it from, doesn't tell me who, but it's from the National Security Council that complained about the containers that keep reproducing blacks, and that you would have to guess the containers, the reproduction elements, as well as the living people to end the race once and for all. In this case, the childbearing members of the tribe would be saturated with AIDS, and this is a story about wiping out maybe an entire Navajo or other smaller tribes of Indian tribes in the United States. The article says the Navajos did not have a reported case of AIDS as of last December. Now it's July, and there are 39 cases that have been reported. It's bad all over the world, because I believe, and play back this broadcast 7 years from now, it is possible to wipe out every black person in Africa and every Indian in the United States just as, say, first targets. Reagan had a slip of tongue in the newspaper last week. Report in the UPI, Reagan addressed a gathering of law enforcement officers yesterday. Speaking of the Crime Control Act, Reagan noted that it, in quotes, eliminated parole and reduced the amount of time off for good behavior that could be granted a president. Then, all of a sudden, the audience realized that the word should have been prisoner instead of president, and the president would be off for good behavior. And that was some interesting slip of the tongue. Another article, July 23rd, in the Washington Post, Iran data sought from the Justice Department besides the signature or handwriting of Ali North. And the article says Lawrence Walsh has made a comprehensive request for information covering the entire Justice Department, including the FBI. And I want to do some more details on William Webster in the future, but right now they're looking into William Webster, including Edwin Meese and the now Webster's director of the CIA, and Oliver B. Revel. And that's a big name in this case that I have not dwelled upon because there's so much material. He was a man who sat with the National Security Council. He was directly under William Webster, and he was very much a part of the entire Iran-Contra operation from beginning to end. In these times, had a story August the 5th, CIA agent's lawyer moves for secrecy in Christic Institute. And this article mentions Mr. Revel in a very interesting point, and I want to throw this out to you, and I'll do more on it in the weeks to come. The article is about Lieutenant retired General Richard Secord, who hired Glenn Robinette to discredit the Christic Institute. You heard Robinette talking before the Iran-Contra hearing. He built the security fence for the Oliver North family. He was from the CIA, and he was hired by Secord to discredit the Christic group and their lawsuit. The Christic Institute claims that North, Secord, Hakim, Robert Owen, Theodore Shackley, Adolfo Calero, and 24 others built a network. In 1984, they bombed Eden Pastora, killed 8 people. The civil suit is brought on by RICO, R-I-C-O, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations, with allegations they ran a cocaine smuggling operation out of Costa Rica, and were going to assassinate the U.S. ambassador to provoke intervention in Nicaragua. I've had a lot about the Christic Institute on the air. But this article goes into Robinette, this controversial, he's not controversial yet, but the article says he is a very important person, and I know he is. And it says Robinette's deposition could be explosive because of his relationship to General Secord from the Stanford Technology Training Group, from Oliver North from the Defense Department and the National Security Council, and Oliver Buck Revel, the senior FBI representative on the NSC's Operation Subgroup on Terrorism. Now, that Operation Subgroup on Terrorism is really translated means create enough terrorism for the excuse for a police state, similar to the P2 that Francesco Pazienza and Alexander Haig and Michael Ledeen were part of. Then the article continues, according to an FBI report released by the Iran-Contra Select Committee, North met with Robinette on July 17, 1986, for the purpose, and this is a former CIA man meeting with North who built his fence, to discuss a former Contra supporter by the name of Jack Terrell, who was talking publicly about North's involvement in a group that was supplying the Contras and smuggling cocaine. Now, the Christic Institute filed their suit May 29, 1986, and keep these dates in their chronological order. The FBI and were meeting with Robinette and North on July 17th to talk about the North's connections to the cocaine Costa Rica activities, the deaths down there, and so forth. And this was 6 weeks after the Christic Institute filed their lawsuit, and he was they were being interviewed. North asked Mr. Robinette, formerly of the CIA, to meet with the FBI about Jack Terrell. Later that evening, Robinette met with the FBI, the CIA man who helped North with his security, who was paid to discredit the Christic Institute, was meeting with the FBI Oliver Buck Revel. July 22nd, 1986, that's 5 days later, the FBI report, they made a report, outlines the discussion between Oliver North and two FBI agents about the former Contra, Mr. Terrell, although it does not explain the FBI's reason for investigating Terrell. He had surfaced and was now helping the Christic Institute and talking about these matters, and they had filed a case in the court in May of 86 that the Iran-Contra group completely ignored, and these dates prove that it was in their time limit to investigate these matters. These same two agents interrogated Terrell in August 86, that's 1 month later, ostensibly about the threat on the life of the president in July of last year, which means in July 1986, there was the possibility of a threat on the president of the United States, and they were asking Terrell about it, and Terrell worked with Secord and Singlaub and Shackley and Kleins and North and Poindexter and that group from the NSC with Adolfo Calero. Now, there is the very strong possibility that when the Christic Institute filed their lawsuit in May 29, 1983, it might have prevented the murder of Ronald Reagan, because the people involved in that murder, who they're interviewing, Mr. Terrell's gang, would be identified with the murder of the President of the United States. Now, a parallel of the same team took place exactly in 1972 in Los Angeles and in Washington, where there were plans to kill Richard Nixon and make Spiro Agnew with his fascist connections President of the United States. It involved Squad 19. I wrote about it in my article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And in the next year, 1983, wrote the Senate Select Committee as part of the cover-up. And there was money transacted being sent down to Miami to Frank Sturgis, the gentleman named in the Christic Institute affidavit, being hired by Santos Trafficanda, the same people. And McCord worked with a 16-man emergency unit in 1972, the same one that Mr. Gufrida went to the War College and prepared in 1970. Then he moved to the head of FEMA, F-E-M-A. He moved to California in 1971, and that's the time when Squad 19 was set up to kill Richard Nixon. He worked with Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan, who had a role with people involved in the murder of John Kennedy and then Robert Kennedy. And the assassination attempt of Reagan, of Nixon, in those days had to be put off because the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. And I wrote about that in my articles on Watergate, why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped, and so forth. And the money that was in the banks of Bernard Barker and E. Howard Hunt and James McCord and that gang was the money also used to create the riots at the convention in Miami in 1972 that didn't happen because the money linked to the people that were going to kill Richard Nixon. I had this detailed through the years, the Meese, the Reagan connections, the Squad 19, and so forth. So it's very possible that with the FBI interviewing Mr. Terrell, these agents, they were discussing a threat on the life of the president in 1986. Why would they be talking about him? Now, in August 1986, in World Watchers, number 767, August the 18th, 1986, I was talking on the air about the lawsuit filed by the Christic Institute on World Watchers, and I know these shows are monitored or whatever, and listened. We're around Fort Ord here and the Hunter League at the Laser Station, the Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies, the Presidio, the Language School for Spies, the Navy Postgraduate School, the Intercommunication Satellite of Kashawa. On this peninsula, we have seven major military installations, and I know that somebody out of that gang tapes these, gets these tapes or listens. And besides that, the Christic Institute filed their suit in May in Miami and were naming the very people in the White House that worked with Oliver North and Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins, John Singlaub, that were running their Central American operations and their worldwide network over in Iran earlier and in Southeast Asia before that. So this article goes into the interest of Robinette, and from In These Times, it says seven people attended the interrogation of Mr. Terrell, Jack Terrell. Only two FBI identified themselves, and he noted the session was more like political debriefing than an investigation. Now, that's the way the General Accounting Office came to my house and talked about Fritz Kramer, and from the National Security Council, a former plans officer of the Pentagon. They didn't even put his name in the report. They didn't want to get facts. It was not an investigation. It was a political debriefing to see what I said or no. But it's interesting that this In These Times says the possibility of the FBI participation in the attempt to discredit the lawsuit is raised July 19, 1986. In the entry of the name of Assistant FBI Director Revel in Robinette's appointment calendar 2 days after North met with Robinette. And then this article continues, Revel's involvement, the FBI, with Robinette was not discussed during the open Iran-Contra hearings, but Christic attorney Lanny Simkin didn't know who Robinette talked to. This wasn't brought up. Who he paid off to discredit their institute, what he got, or what other activities he was engaged in. So I think the chronology here of these people is very interesting because the coup that didn't happen in March 81, where George Bush would be president and Alexander Haig would be in charge, didn't happen, but it was very easy if they had remained in power and there had been no Christic Institute suit filed to maybe get away with a murder-era coup or do away with Reagan. But it could be that the filing of that suit May 29th triggered the FBI in July and then in August, and they pinned down a man who had left the gang, Jack Terrell, and asked him about a threat on the life of the president. And, of course, that threat could be very real. And now our president is going to Santa Barbara, and he's going to take about 25 days off. And as I mentioned last week on World Watchers, it was Frank Carlucci, the current National Security Director, who at that time was Deputy Director in the Defense Department, who wrote, "Normally, a state of martial law will be proclaimed by the president. However, in the absence of such action by the president, a senior military commander may impose martial law." Now, at the time Reagan was shot in March 81, there was a big battle going on in Washington, D.C., Bush, the former CIA director, Vice President George Bush, against Alexander Haig, who was Secretary of State. And Bush, as Vice President, wanted to be in charge of domestic control of all domestic areas if there were a martial law emergency taking place, and Haig wanted to be in charge of it as Secretary of State, taking the domestic as well as the overseas assignment. And Bush won out. And Bush has stayed thick with those very people in El Salvador and the ones arming the Contras, with the people linked down to Klaus Barbie in Bolivia. And Bush has been isolated from the entire Iran-Contra story, and I believe his roots go much deeper as former CIA director to these people. And he did win out over Haig as in charge of the domestic area in case of an emergency. I saw a movie last week that I hope it comes to your town. It's a small movie, low production cost. It would be at one of the theaters where you have foreign movies, if you lucky enough to be in a city that has them. And it's called On the Border, directed by Peter Torbjörnsson, made in 1986. It took 2 years to film. It's a Swedish director who spent several years in Nicaragua and El Salvador talking to people about the war in their countries. On the Border takes the director and the cameraman to the border of El Salvador and flights to Honduras, the Nicaragua border, Honduras, the Nicaraguans with the Costa Ricans, the Hondurans trying to get to Mexico, from Mexico to the United States, and it shows various family members, a very personal account of experiences and people being killed and some even surviving and being returned back from the United States to El Salvador. But in the movie, there's an interesting shot almost towards the end of the movie, and it showed a place in Honduras where the CIA and the United States government were having their meetings or war councils, and Daniel Ortega was there. Maybe they had gone to Nicaragua, as a matter of fact. And in the scene, there's a flash of Henry Kissinger with Oliver North, and I almost fell off my chair seeing the two together. But Henry Kissinger was handed the Central American policy when Senator Henry Jackson was dead. He died one night after Larry McDonald was killed in the Korean airline crash. Very quietly, Henry Jackson had a heart attack. The entire Jackson machinery went to the National Security Council and to the Defense Department, like Richard Pearl and Jackson's proteges. And Henry Kissinger then entered formally the Central American policies for Ronald Reagan. He had not touched Kissinger. He had his co-partner Haig as Secretary of State the first 2 years. But in comes Henry Kissinger, mounting his white horse and taking over Central American policy. And with him in the Central American policy bloodbath operations was Oliver North, who traveled with him. But this was a chance to see the two together in a movie. So if you go to a foreign movie theater where these movies are shown, ask for On the Border. It was filmed in 1986, and see Oliver North with Henry Kissinger. And I want to do more on the National Security Council and the KAL pretty soon. I've mentioned that before. Well, the secret team isn't secret if you know them. The Iran-Contra hearings are over. On CBS Sunday morning, Charles Kuralt had three people talking about the National Security Council and what was wrong with Ronald Reagan. One was Henry Kissinger, one was the big new Brzezinski, and the other one was a gentleman from England. One from Germany, one from Poland, and one from England, who literally run our country, stand by the wayside and watch these other people get sloughed off if they get caught in the act, and the elder statesmen stay there on every channel of television and in the printed press. The Washington Post had an article July 21st, 1987, a full half page. The Iran-Contra hearings, the 10th week of testimony. Former security aides suggest Poindexter overstepped his authority, and the experts, of course, are Brent Scowcroft, president of Kissinger Associates, Henry Kissinger, and Zbigniew Brzezinski. Another long article in the Wall Street Journal, the member of the secret team comes right out in front. It's Michael Ledeen, August the 10th, the day how the Iran initiative went wrong. And all of a sudden, he's an expert talking about the Iran initiative. Instead of going to jail, he's president of ISI Enterprises, a consulting firm in Chevy Chase, and the enterprise that he has is part of the enterprise of Secord, Hakim, Shackley, Kleins, Eric von Marburg, and Kissinger, and Fritz Kramer, and Michael Ledeen is a part of that, and a protege of Robert McFarland, and close to Poindexter, and now he has a quarter of a page, and he will be continuously writing instead of wearing the striped suit of a prisoner of the Wall Street Journal, how the Iran initiative went wrong. He gets to be published and recognized in those terms. I'll just have one item, a couple to mention before I go on to the new appointment of FBI Director We'll take a one-minute break now before I get on to that subject. I have a couple more news items to update with you. This is Mae Brussel, and we'll be back together in about 1 minute.